You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Mistress of None. This is, of course, Erin Harkes. I hope you're all doing fantastic. So we tried something new and I think interesting last week. I met with my friend Rick Marshall, who is starting his own podcast with the Daily Gazette under the umbrella of his new job there as digital content creator. I think it's amazing for him and for us as a community to have somebody like that working there. And so last week's episode was him interviewing me for his first podcast, and I went ahead and interviewed him right back. And so that's what this week is, me asking him the questions. You'll notice if you listen to both of them that I do most of the talking regardless. But Rick is an old friend, really great guy, just wonderful head to toe. We had a great discussion. We go way, way back. There aren't many people in my life that have, I guess, for lack of a better term, survived all of the eras of my life. I definitely went through, you know, my shit. And there's not many people that I really still talk to from before I got sober. And since I've been sober, I mean, I think with anybody, the older you get, the more your friend list kind of chisels down a bit. I think that's a safe bet for everybody. And I think that that's honestly a good thing. And Rick and I kind of talk about that a little bit and about how, you know, sometimes like you mourn a certain relationship with people that you grow apart from. And sometimes I think you celebrate it. It's okay to miss people that no longer serve a good positive purpose in your life. And that might sound cold to some people, but ultimately I think it's necessary. You have to take care of yourself, and you have to make sure that you are healthy so that you can be healthy for the people that you need to be there for. And I've always had this theory, this like metaphor, I guess, where I say that each person in my life has their own separate like gas tank. And I just say gas tank again, for lack of a better term. I'm not always the most creative person in the world, but I feel like every relationship in my life, they have their own tank. And I have like this tank for you. You're welcome to take out of this tank whenever you need to. But if you don't put something back in that tank, I'm going to have to take from other people's tanks to help you. And that's not fair to the other people in my life. So if you can't give back, if you're just constantly taking and taking and taking, I'm going to get to the point where I don't have anything left to give you. And the older you get, the more you realize how sometimes relationships are very one-sided, and some people just keep taking until you have nothing. And it's fine. Like, but when you start taking from the relationships that are replenishing me, and I don't have time for these people and I don't have energy for these people, like if you suck every last ounce out of me, and then, you know, a really great friend of mine needs my help and I'm just too destroyed to help them, then that's not fair. You know, I think especially during the pandemic, I know that everybody went a little nuts, and that's understanding and understandable. And I, of course, did too. I was home. I wasn't working. I was missing audiences. I was struggling. I was doing my best. But the key thing was that I kept up with my therapy. And I think everybody could benefit from having some sort of therapy in their lives, because honestly, your friends are just not equipped to absorb all of what you have to lay out for them. And nobody should have to do that for another person in their life. Totally. Like, I can be there for you, but at some point, like, you got to get this shit out with a qualified, paid professional. And, you know, maybe throw a pill or two in there. I'm not advocating for drugs. I'm just saying, you know, I've been on a little anti-anxiety bump for the past couple of years, and it feels like vacation, but that's my little pitch for the day. I don't advocate for drug use, obviously, but, you know, some of you might use it. Anyway, That's me going off on a tangent, for what it's worth. But it, my point is, talking with somebody like Rick, who I've known for over 20 years now, and who I've seen and who has seen me through various points in our lives. Like, you know, he got married. He had a couple of kids. I got sober. I started doing this full time, and he's just always had a presence in my life at some point or another. And so he is a true friend. He is somebody that has survived all of those levels. And, as we mentioned in this episode, like, my contact with him and his wonderful family during the pandemic, during my live streams and stuff, was as helpful to me as I hope it was to them. So bottom line, he's a good guy. Bottom line, hold on to the people that fill you up, that fill your cup. And, you know, maybe say a little goodbye to those who don't. It's not, doesn't make you a bad person, but it keeps you whole. So that's my little whatever for this week. Anyway, this is my interview with Rick Marshall. His podcast is called Martial Arts, which I think is hilarious, and I love it, and it's going to be great. And I hope you listen to this and listen to his and follow him. I'll tag him on all the appropriate things so that you know how to find him and follow him. And we'll be right back with Rick Marshall.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. Today, I am joined by my very, very good friend, Rick Marshall. Rick, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm well. I know I just started choking on some water, so I'm sounding fantastic, but we'll have fun editing that later. So this is like kind of a two-parter, I guess, because last week Rick interviewed me for his new podcast, which I think is a fantastic idea for him to have a podcast. We'll see if this doubling episode thing is a good idea either. Who knows? I'm trying everything for the seven people that listen.
Theoretically, it's a brilliant idea.
You know what? That's what I tell myself, you know, but then again, I oscillate pretty violently back and forth from self-confidence to lack of self-esteem. And so, you know, if you're catching
struggle
me on a good
real
day, I'm feeling pretty good. So, Rick, it's so nice to see you again.
It is always nice to see you.
It's going to be interesting to try and talk about things. Like last week, Rick interviewed me, so now I'm going to interview him. You're going to see how vastly different our interviewing styles are, in that Rick planned questions, and I don't do anything like that. Also, I don't think we swore at all on yours, and you know I'm probably going to on this one just because I'm a filthy...
That is okay. That is perfectly okay.
Filth mouth.
Swearing as punctuation works.
So Rick and I have known each other for over two decades now.
Wow.
I know. I'm at, like, the past few years have been tough in the realization department when it comes to how many years have passed since I have met and or started something. And
we were born in the 1900s, as my kids say.
Well, your kids are brats. And that's just so weird to me that there were people that weren't born in the 1900s around and they're talking. Like, I mean, I keep forgetting. I forgot what day it was, so I also can forget what year and era it is as well. But Rick and I have known each other for quite some time. He came out to see me play quite a bit when I first started out here in the Capital Region, singing blues at Savannah's, at the Tuesday Night Blues Jam, and then beyond that. And
following you around like a groupie.
I love it. But beyond that, Rick has had a career in journalism, which took you down to New York and then back. So tell us a little bit about your experience in this field of journalism.
Well, I started out up here, up in the Capital Region for Metroland.
Woo-hoo!
Which, as we have talked about, was not the reason why we became friends, which I feel very good about.
Yes, I did make a joke about that normally that would have been on my radar, and I would have been like, hey, Rick, oh, I hear you
great for Metroland, but you know.
We were friends before a journalist. And yeah, and started out up here as a journalist for Metroland, a staff writer up here, and then eventually moved down south to the Rockland County area to work for a magazine company down there who was launching, they were launching a website and trying to make that transition from print to digital, and I helped them do that. And then eventually landed down in New York City working for MTV News, which was a very trippy, surreal sort of experience working in Times Square there for years. And then eventually found my way back here, as so many people do. Found my way back up here, and I'm currently the senior digital content producer at the Daily Gazette, a role that is brand new to me.
Those were the only questions that I had, so we're just going to chat from here because I was going to say, tell us about your new job, but that's awesome. I'm, of course, going to take partial credit for you working here now because, you know, once I knew that Nippertown was absorbed by the Gazette, you were on my radar to try and help you find something because you and I had met to discuss another project and then you were laid off and I was using that time off to my advantage to find something for you to do, but that was kind of on my radar. And I'm kidding, of course. I know it wasn't my idea, but I was really excited when I heard that when there was an opening that you were able to get it. That was some great news as a friend and as somebody in the scene who likes to make, nurtures those connections. And I know that you'll be not only great for the Gazette, but for the Capital Region.
I hope to be
in this position.
It's been interesting because one of the things I've had to adjust to in this role has been a more localized view on arts entertainment. For the longest amount of time, I had been working for national and sort of digital and even international outlets covering arts and entertainment for them. So there was this much bigger sort of big picture look at entertainment. And it's been interesting to have to sort of readjust to the local level. And it's been interesting, especially to notice some of the things that are still going on from that I was aware of prior that are still going on and sort of rediscovering some of the fun things that are going on around this region.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've always kind of kept your finger to the pulse.
Very much so.
Yeah. But I mean, you also have started a family and we're working from home.
Yes.
Which is awesome, but it can also, you know, the coupling of those two things don't really lend itself much to, you know, much of a nightlife, social life anyway.
Oh,
I'm not saying
no.
That you had no social life whatsoever, but
it's okay. You can say that.
Okay. That's, all right. Fair. I didn't want to hurt any feelings, but
no lies detected whatsoever.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, more outings. I mean, besides coming to see me play at like ice cream places, you know, your outings were probably more
based
around.
You letting me know that you were playing somewhere was sort of the sum total of my social life.
Yeah.
So
I made sure that it was close to you.
Yes.
And that it was kid friendly.
Yes.
And, you know, because it's, you know, one, yes, I need people there, but also I do enjoy seeing you and I enjoy seeing your family as often as I can. So I can imagine. Now, how long were you working from home?
About 12 years, which is wild because I realized upon taking sort of some jobs in the last year or so after I was sort of taking on a couple of other gigs and that required me to actually put on pants. so I had to learn how to do that all over again and be out in public. I was working from home for about 12 years and you get to the point where early on my family would give me gifts and they'd give me pajamas and they'd be like, we got you work clothes. And it'd be this hilarious joke. We got you work clothes because you work from home in the basement office. And then after a while, I'm realizing, well, you know, I might like some real clothes. Like I kind of have to go outside sometimes. And now I have a job where I do. And I have actually kind of enjoyed getting dressed for work. I don't need to get dressed as much as I do, but with the collared shirts and things like that. But I'm kind of enjoying the opportunity to look like a real adult and do some actual adulting.
And have like a more regular type schedule that you can work around. Who were you working for when you were working from home?
For the longest amount of time for Digital Trends. It is the largest independent consumer technology news site on the internet. It's been around for ages. I covered their entertainment section. I basically ran their sort of entertainment side of things. A lot of covering of streaming, things with a tech angle. I wrote an annual series called Oscar Effects, where I would interview the Oscar nominees in the visual effects category each year. For the last like 10 years or so, I would interview the nominees in that category, and you know, do profiles of each of the Oscar nominees there. And I do a lot of like talking to you know, creative types and cast and creators and things like that for movies and television shows, and did a lot of weird, it lended itself to a lot of weird moments where at one point you know, I came upstairs for lunch and my wife was there and she was asking how my day is going so far. And I was like, well, I just was in the basement talking to Henry Cavill. So that was a thing. That's a thing that happens sometimes.
You definitely had a post here and there that I was like, what?
Very strange, like where you're at it. And because I'm working in the basement, working from home, there was often this case where I had a shirt hanging next to the computer and my desk there, where I could, you know, I put that shirt on and do all my interviews while wearing, that's my interview shirt. And so I could look official when the video comes on. And it's very, very weird moments when you're doing things like that in the basement, talking to Oscar nominees and Oscar winning directors in your basement.
Well, it's not as weird in the past 4 years because a lot of people had to adapt to work from home. For me, the only reason that I put jeans on was to make sure that they still fit during the pandemic. And my friend was like, why bother? I was like, because if I can't button them, I need to figure something out, because I just like normally like March and April is when I'm like, okay, you're going to have to wear a swimsuit again, get your ass out, ride your bike, do whatever. And it was like that time hit and the pandemic hit. And I was like, I'm just going to lean into it. I'm going to learn how to bake. You know, I made bread like every other white lady, you know, but so my friend was like, why are you putting the jeans on? I was like, because it's keeping me honest. Otherwise it's going to be, I'll be another casualty of this pandemic in a much different way.
I have a great from scratch chocolate chip cookie recipe that was my pandemic sort of revelation. And so that was what I did. I ended up doing a lot of baking myself, but mine was of the cookie variety, which definitely made it so that I had to check all of my clothes once I had to venture out into the outdoors.
Yeah.
It was interesting with the pandemic too, because where it forced a lot of people indoors and there was this acclimation factor for everyone having to work inside like that. It was very different for me who was accustomed to working from home in an empty house, and suddenly I had a house filled with people. And it also brought me closer to a lot of people I worked with, because for almost 8-9 years, I had never even like spoken on video with the people who I worked for and worked with. And suddenly they were doing virtual meetings and video meetings. And I got to actually get a lot closer with the people I worked with, which is a weird thing to say about the pandemic when everyone got sort of sequestered away. But I got to know people better who I worked with because of that.
I think for me, I ended up getting to know some people better and kind of also thinning out the herd of my circle, because you realize you got to see people for who they really were when that started to happen. And everybody was going through something. So like, you can't really have much expectation for people to necessarily be there for one another to an extent. But there was just all of like some people in my life that just took. And all of a sudden I was like, listen, like, I mean, I know I'm not suffering as much as some other people out there, but like, I'm home. I'm out of work, which is like a nightmare for me. That was always my worst case scenario, was that I would just not, I thought it would be like a vocal cyst or something, that I would just not be able to work anymore without any warning whatsoever. And then all of a sudden, like, I woke up and that was my reality. And I realized, and I have like jokes about this now, like I realized how much I really missed an audience. And I hate to admit that I require that much validation, but I do. I was like, oh my God, like my husband would walk through on my live streams occasionally and just go like this after a song, which was very sweet of it. But I'd be like, like, do it again. What's that sound? I love it. You know, it was.
I don't know. I sent you a lot of clap emojis during your live stream.
And I appreciated them so much, but you know. after like a month, I was like, it's just not doing it for me anymore. So, and then I would do like a Zoom comedy show, which was awful because there's just this nanosecond delay and every joke felt like you were bombing. So I only did two of those. I was like, I can't do this. This is making things worse.
I never thought about that with comedy, with that slight delay. Oh. That's interesting.
Some people put up with it. Some people did it. I just couldn't do it. I was like, it's making me feel worse. There's wow. no way to, there just that split second, because when I'm on stage and I tell a joke, if it's a slow burn, then yeah, it's cool that people don't laugh right away. But if you don't get that instant ignition of response, that every little tiny millisecond in there feels like somebody's sitting on your chest. It's like you're not going to be able to breathe anymore. Like you need, like right away, like, whew, you know, because I'm out on a limb each time. And so, yeah, so that was just a bad experience for me. But anyway, we are getting quite sidetracked, which is what happens all the time on.
I'm always fascinated. So.
You're on Mistress of None. No, but I'm so glad that you have found your way here at the Gazette. I think that's going to be great for a lot of people. While you were sharing originally, and I don't know why this hasn't popped into my head until now, like every time I think of Metroland, I wonder how not easy, but even plausible it would be to ever revive.
I think that for the most part, alternative news weeklies have sort of moved into the rearview mirror of that ilk, because print advertising is in such a bad space sometimes that it's difficult to sort of get something like that off the ground again. And there's so many other options for advertising. There's so many people doing exactly what Metroland had done and was doing early on. I mean, if you think about it, when I got onto Metroland, blogs were still a fresh thing that were happening, and there wasn't everyone, you know, writing about everything going on locally. There weren't all of these, and as we've discovered, in many cases, wonderful writers sort of who had an outlet to do their own thing. They had to write for a place like that in order to get their words out there. But now they don't. The internet was still sort of in that weird early phase. And now it has shifted a little bit. And we do have things like Nippertown, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful outlet for that. That's the closest we get now. And I think that has a lot of potential. And I'm looking forward to having more of my work on there, because it does feel a little bit like those Metroland days.
If I know that you're helping edit, I'll consider writing for it again. That used to be the thing that would hang me up. I'd be like, I'd write something. I'm like, you need to fine tooth comb this, because when I get on a rant, it's not a pretty sight. Like the story's there, which is why I asked you to help me with the writing things. But which I guess we could talk about that too. Yeah, but like even in a digital sense, because I feel like people bring up Metroland and people are still seem to be very fond of it. Like they have very fond memories. It'd be interesting to see if like something could ever be.
It would be. We've tried a few times in the local area. They had, you know, the Alt. They had a few different publications that came out.
Yeah, how long did the Alt go for?
I'm not sure offhand, but like that was there and had a lot of promise, and it was involved. A lot of former Metrolanders were all involved.
I noticed
with it
that.
Too.
Yeah,
yeah. And so things have tried to get off the ground, but I think that it's difficult. The print advertising landscape is very, very difficult now, and for the most part, that's what funds these types of things.
Yeah.
You know, Metroland was never in the, spoiler alert, surprise, Metroland was never in the greatest of financial, like, situations to begin with. I don't think that was a secret to anyone. It was beloved by all. It was a wonderful place. It was a very formative experience for me writing there. I was able to write alongside and be edited by some of the most talented editors and authors and writers that I've met in my entire life thus far. And it was a wonderful formative experience, but it was also very much the sort of caricature, I don't know, not caricature, but like the sort of archetype of the indie news scene. You went out, you did your thing. On payday, there was often a race to get to the bank so that your paycheck didn't bounce. I was, you know, most of your meals were eaten via trade, where you have, in addition, basically in return for some of the advertising, some of the local businesses, restaurants, things like that would, you know, give you a certain amount of discount or comp some of your meals or things like that. And that was horrifically abused. I think I had every meal for like several years at one of three places on Lark Street, sort of situation. And so, you know, I don't know if that will ever be able to come back together again the way that it was.
Probably. It was funny to me when I reached out to Steve Leon about doing, because I had the cover in 2005.
Yes.
Our friend Katie Lurie wrote the article. And it was 2015, and I approached Steve and said, what if we do like a, you know, like a 10 years later kind of thing? Like, I had no angle. I didn't have anything really to promote. Like, I was doing comedy now, but I just, you know, any wild angle I can come up with to throw at somebody to stay relevant in the press, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
And he bit, and he thought it was good. And he wrote the article, and we got some pictures and everything. And the day it came out, this was like right towards like the death rattle of Metroland. I didn't realize it at the time, but, and I'm not saying that, like...
So what you're saying is you killed Metroland.
I killed Metroland. It was my fault. Like, I'm not saying that to be, like, you know, unkind. Like, I was sad that happened with Metroland. But that particular day that it came out, the website was down for some reason. And we know what the reason might have been, but whatever. It was, like, it was down. And I was like, all right, well, the article will be there when it comes back up. But what's funny to me is one... Somebody, I wouldn't call them a nemesis because, like, they shouldn't even register on me, but it's, like, another professional in the area who is just full of shit. And he messaged me, and he goes, hey, he was like, saw the article. Congratulations. It's a great article. And I said, oh, cool. And he was like, I forget what I asked next, but he ended up saying, he's like, yeah, I'm down in New York and my friend sent it to me. And I said, like, physically sent it to you? And he goes, no, she emailed it to me. And I go, well, that's weird because their website is down. And like, he didn't write anything for a few minutes. He's like, well, I don't know. Like, I read it. Like, it was just like, he was caught.
Wow.
Like, you picked the wrong day to lie about
a scandal.
Having, yeah. I was like, oh, that's weird. How did you read it? And nobody else could. And then here was the other thing that used to drive me absolutely crazy was anytime I ever got anything like that, a handful of people would go around and pick up every copy they could find for me. And I'm like, the point is,
to get the word out there about you.
I would have these lesbians coming to my shows with like a stack of 15 and 20. I'm like, no.
Did they at least ask you to sign them?
No, nothing like that.
What's the point then?
They wanted to make sure that I had enough copies. And I'm like, I have a copy. People would message me. They're like, I picked up a few copies just in case you didn't get one. And I'm like, first of all, you know, my mom has 75. All right. You know. But even that was obviously too many. But I kept trying to tell people, like, put them back.
Leave them for the people.
I want more people than you to read this. Oh. Like, I mean, they had the best intentions, but I was like, guys, you're killing me.
Yeah. Some people don't quite understand how that works.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as I've learned, as you have learned, there is a nuance to how these things work that sometimes gets lost in the mix.
There's even so many nuances.
People who have the best intentions.
Yes. And I try to go, because, you know, there's always somebody in my life that'll be like, well, they meant well. And I'm like, I know that they meant well, but I'm going to bitch about this for a few minutes. And you just need to listen. Don't offer solutions. Hear me out. I need to be heard, obviously, and then I'll move on.
I'm just upset they didn't ask you to sign them, at least.
I signed some here and there.
I feel like that's the point of getting some and bringing them to you, is to have
getting
you sign
one.
Them.
One and bringing it to me, not like a whole stack. Like, you just took everything out of, you know, Professor Java's. Like, you're killing me. The best Metroland story, though, was I moved into this apartment, which ended up being a fairly scary building. And it was like around the day that the 2005 article came out. I had just moved in because Joe Puttrock and I did our photo shoot in there.
Ah, Joe.
Yeah. And I saw him at David Sedaris last week, and I texted him and I'm like, turn around. And he's like, no. But Yeah, so he and I did the shoot in my apartment. Like a week later, it came out. And it was when I was starting to realize that it wasn't the best place to live in Albany. And so some, I almost said patients, which I guess they were, some of the other residents of this building, I had worked at a mental health clinic as a temp back in 2000, 2001.
Oh boy, and these are the people from work that you probably don't want.
Exactly. So I was seeing people that were clients there. And so they're already looking at me like they think they remember who I am. But now there's a magazine in the lobby that some of them are like looking at. And I'm just like, oh, I was scared to death. But the worst was I went down to borrow a hammer from the maintenance guy, which we called One-Eyed Willie. He had both eyes. I don't know why I called him One-Eyed Willie. I wasn't very clever back then. And I knocked on his door.
I so want to diverge and talk about that, but I'll allow you to continue on.
Because I must have had Goonies on the brain or something. But I knocked on his door and he opened it just enough to where his face was showing, very shining, right? And when he saw it was me, he's like, oh, hey, Aaron, how you doing? I go, good. Can I borrow a hammer? I'm hanging some stuff in the apartment. And he goes, sure. And he steps back from the door, so the door slowly opens. And over his fireplace was my Metroland cover hanging.
That's not creepy at all.
And I'm like, give me the hammer. I was like, wow. Yeah. And then I think a month later, I saw his cousin or whoever was living in that apartment with him.
Were there candles around it?
I didn't check. I think I went terror blind. But I saw his cousin a month later. I knocked to return the hammer. And I was like, is Willie here? And he goes, no, he died. And I'm like, that's not funny. And he goes, I'm not kidding. And I was like, what the fuck? I need to get out of this fucking building.
You both need to get out of it and catalog everything that went on to write about at a later point.
Well, this brings me to another point because Rick is going to help me write my book eventually. Maybe not now because you're very busy, but we'll have to figure out something.
I would love to.
But I did come to you when you were first laid off. I was like, with this time, help me out with this and help me write and not sound dumb. But that's definitely got to be a whole chapter.
Oh, for sure.
The Mayflower Apartments.
And then there has to be a postscript about One-Eyed Willie.
I have no good story for that. That's just what I called him. Not to his face, but
I want to know what the person looks like now to where you would get One-Eyed Willie from, but we don't even need to digress that far, but I am, it's almost better that I don't know. It's almost better that I have no details other than this.
If you ever change your mind,
yeah,
I'll describe him for you to the best of my memory. It was also 2005, which we know before 2010 is all a fucking blur anyway, so.
True. That's fair.
So you are here now. We are at the actual Gazette office doing this interview. I like this.
We're in a fancy podcast studio.
I do like the studio. That's something I should at least hang these foam things at home or something, but
Oh, they're great. You can stick them in the wall and they make it look really professional.
It's awesome.
We have them at home in our home studio.
You could barely hear the people walking by.
Yes, it's very nice.
I think my husband would prefer that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your hopes and dreams and plans here? What do you want to do?
Really? I'm still getting the lay of the land in a lot of ways. The job is very fresh right now. It's very open, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. Sometimes when you come into a position and, you know, there's a very sort of, hey, we want you to do great things.
Yeah.
We just want you to do what you think will help. It's can be difficult because for me, as you know me, I like sort of guardrails on things.
Well,
I like some direction on things. So it's taken a little bit to get used to get lay of the land, find out where things are at here. And the Gazette is a wonderful publication. My family, I grew up reading it because I grew up not too far from here and that border of Gelderland, Schenectady, Rotterdam area there. So it's been a part of my life for a long time, and it's kind of surreal to be here in the office right now. Yeah, what I'm hoping to work on here is to do some fun digital features. I mean, that's what they hired me to do. I'm hoping to sort of bring a spotlight on some great businesses and some artists and people and places around their area that I think could use some more attention. And I think there's sort of places that when I hang out with friends of mine and they ask what I've been up to, I want to give them recommendations of places. I want to tell them, hey, I went to this really cool place and did this, or hey, I met this great person who does this. And that's sort of what I want to be focusing on here. And we're still sort of figuring out all of the ways that I can do that. And it's been kind of wonderful to have that sort of freedom, but at the same time kind of paralyzing in ways that you're like, there's so many things I want to do. Which one do I do first?
I get that.
Yeah. It's a really interesting position to be in, and it's not the first time I've been in it, but it's always sort of, it takes a little while to kind of get your groove and figure out, okay, this is what's going to work. This is the best way to do all those things that you want to do, is to do these first and then branch off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like all of this obviously is an adjustment, like, you know, coming back to an office after 12 years. This is, you know, it's, even though you've done things like this before, this is pretty new.
Yeah, it's definitely an adjustment to be coming back in. It was nice. I had a little bit of a segue sort of back into the office and professional, you know, outside of my basement office sort of life. I worked for a little while at the a couple of days a week at the local library, which was a wonderful experience for the soul. After you sort of go through a bit of a media consolidation and sort of a downturn in a realization that maybe the media, you know, business itself is changing a lot of ways that you weren't quite ready for. You sometimes need something that refreshes your faith in humanity. And so I spent a few months doing a couple of days a week at a library, at a local library, and it was wonderful. My gosh, I can't say it enough. Be kind to your local librarian. Be nice to them, because they are doing so much more than anyone realizes. Just being around the people at the library was refreshing for my soul, like just to be around good
people.
Like
a palate cleanser.
It really was. Like, and I said that when I told them I was leaving. I literally said, working here has been good for the soul. It's been exactly what I needed. I'm sorry I have to go. I have some other, you know, opportunities coming that I need to sort of take advantage of, but this has been exactly what I needed at that point in my life. And I can't say enough good things about the experience of working at a library and just being a part of the library community. So please, anyone listening to this, please be nice to your librarians. Go say hello to a librarian.
I saw you at the library. I was bringing my niece by just to figure out something to do. You know, I'm not a parent, so me, like, you know, being in library. Charge of a kid was interesting. But we had a great time at the library. There were toys and stuff for her to play with. She definitely was not interested in any books because there were other kids. And, like, I would love watching her watch another kid, just the way she, like, locks in and she walks up to him like a creep. And then they're like, you want to play? And she's like, yeah. You know, so she just played and I got to
kids are wild.
Sit and watch that. And I think you heard my voice from the back and came out to say hello. But I just knocked him out when I talked about me going to the library. I think I knocked a lot of other people out too. So I think that the libraries are wonderful and they should be supported in every way. And yes, you should be kind to everybody, but especially to your local librarians.
Yeah, it was an eye-opening experience for me, and I'm very glad I had it. I often think about the fact that I want to write about the library. I because it was such a wonderful experience.
Well, maybe that could be one of your features.
I think it just might be.
See, this is why it helps to talk to me, because now I've just figured out how you can narrow down.
Planned out.
You know, you're all spread out over the place, and now you're like, library. You're welcome.
Well, it's wonderful. You know, this podcast that we are launching here is, you know, one part of that sort of different pronged approach towards covering arts and different areas of the capital region and beyond in some fun new digital ways. I'm really excited about the podcast because it's something I've wanted to do for a long time, and I'm really thrilled that the Gazette is allowing me to do so. And I'm going to be able to talk to people like you and, you know, artists. I'm really kind of casting a wide net. I just want to talk to people who are involved in the arts all around the region, different mediums. I have a whole bunch of different things planned. I'm going to be talking to people who work in the comic book world, who work in the video game world, who work in, you know, all different sort of areas of the arts that aren't just, you know, aren't just nerdery, like the two that I just mentioned.
Well, are you saying that you're a nerd?
A little bit. Yeah.
Well, you're a delightful nerd. But I remember when you and I were talking about my book idea, you did say that you had been thinking about doing a podcast for some time. So I'm glad you're finally getting around to do it. And I'm honored that I am your first guest. So...
You were the first person I thought of, and I'm not even saying that because I'm on talking with you right now.
Aww.
You were the person I thought of.
I have a gun under the table. No, but I mean, it's always a delight to talk to you, and I'm honored to know you professionally and socially, and your family, and it's always great. So.
It's been wonderful. I was very excited to bring out that first album of yours during our episode. I got to tell you, when I was writing up my questions for you and planning out the interview, I was looking at them like, you know what? I know I have the album. I'm pretty sure I know where it is. Because the problem is I don't have anything to play it on anymore. I don't have a CD player.
I can send you the MP3s.
I like this, and I'm pretty sure I have it downloaded in digital form. But I wanted the... printed out on your home computer, you know, with the scrawled CD, burned CD on it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to bring that in and show you that.
I know, and I appreciate that. But I was trying to find something for somebody a while back, and I ended up listening a little bit to that album, which is called Bar Napkins and Magic Markers. And, oh, my God, like, I can't listen to it without laughing.
Really?
Oh, my God. I'm just... I mean, I'm proud of 20-year-old me.
Yeah.
But also like, oh, honey.
I adore the album. It is wonderful. So
thank you. But obviously I feel the same way. Critic, you know?
I often can't listen to my own voice on anything.
So. Which is awesome when you're editing podcasts. You're going to have a great time with this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel. Yeah. Every time I do comedy videos, music and podcasts. So I'm just a masochist, I guess, because I have to listen to and look at myself for hours on end a day.
Combine that with the fact that I'm sort of a perfectionist with certain things, and then you end up with this very long process at which I am editing out like every little and like and things like that, that, you know, because I can and because I'm a perfectionist and I have to sort of pull myself back from that a bit and be like, no, you can't do that. You can't do that for everything.
Yeah. Well, I don't do that at all for like the podcast stuff, because somebody said when you're listening back to it, and I'm like, first of all, I'm not, because I can't. And when I'm doing, like when I did the comedy album, I was very intense in the editing of that. I was very involved. But then I got to a point where I said to the producers, I was like, you just got to go, because I'll chop this thing down to nothing. Yeah. Like, I'm getting to that point. But then I got back in. At the last minute, I spent a few more days just really going crazy with it. And that was a really torturous ordeal. But with music, I will let the producer be my guide. It's got to be somebody that I trust. And I'll be like, you know what? You just have to say good enough. And don't send it to me to listen and get my opinion, because I will tell you to throw it out. That will be my opinion. So it's tough. But, you know, we're in this business that we... you know, have to come to terms with our own talents.
Oh, and every time I see myself on television, I'm like, why would you wear that? why would you sit like that? There are like photos of me and clips from video where I had gone on. I used to do a regular appearance on a morning talk show in New York City that I used to go on. And I would talk about they'd bring me on basically anytime there was something nerdy or geeky to talk about. They're like, hey, you know, it's Star Wars Day. Let's bring on Rick. Or, hey, it's Christmas time. Let's, you know, bring Rick on to talk about things you can get for your nerdy friend. Or, you know, this is happening in comics. Let's bring Rick on to talk about it. And they started putting, the first time I went on, it was funny. I was about being rushed onto the set, and they're like, oh, hey, by the way, how do you want us to chiron you? How do you want to introduce you? What should we do? And I kind of ran through the different roles I had had. I was like, well, you know, I've been an editor at this place, and I've been such at this place, because, you know, I was freelance at that point. And I'm like, you know, I'm basically a professional geek, you know, and kind of walked out there. And then when I see the broadcast, they're like, Rick Marshall, professional geek. And like, oh, okay, so that's what they went with. And so, but you know, you can go both ways with it. You can get upset with it, or you can embrace it. And I've embraced it. I love it. But you know, watching
at the time, you're like, come on.
Yeah, and watching some of these appearances when you're on TV, you just kind of go, oh, I wish I wasn't sitting like that. And oh, I wish I had worn something different than that now. In retrospect, that In hindsight, you know, that wasn't a great idea. But at the time, I thought that was a really cool look.
Well, I mean, I went on Jimmy Fallon without a bra. So I think I got you beat there. I didn't know I was going to be on TV, though.
Well, I mean, I went on TV without a bra, too. So.
Well, all right. Whenever people are, did you know you were going to be on Jimmy Fallon? I'm like, if I was, don't you think I would have been wearing a bra? Like, I had this big, like, floaty, like, hippie dress kind of thing. No makeup. I looked like a, I looked terrible. But
you won the competition.
I did win the competition. I was like, well, I got to win this shit if I'm going to look like this, you know? But no, we actually, I just realized, though, we did news together.
Yes.
We did it
many years ago. Many years ago, we did a local one. A friend of mine, we did the fundraiser.
Yes.
For a friend of mine who had been killed. And we did we were raising money for a scholarship in his name. And you were so kind to perform at the fundraiser that we held. And this was at the old Lark Tavern.
The old
Lark Tavern. And it was, I brought a friend of mine, his band came up from New York City, and you were so wonderful to perform at this fundraiser.
No,
and it was great. And that scholarship is actually still going.
That's awesome.
At the place. It's continued there. That was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And also to have to get on stage and sort of MC that event was a weird one for me. That was one of the first times I had MC'd in front of a band.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone on and talked about nerdy stuff before. I could talk about movies and TV.
But this
things,
was
but
something completely different. Yeah, it was very personal to you
personal.
And very sad.
Yes, very much so. And then I had all these friends of mine gearing up behind me to play and a bar full of people who weren't all people I knew. There was a fundraiser, you know, where
it
was
a good
general
showing.
Audience. Yeah.
And you can always count on a band when you're making an announcement in front of a band. They realize that they're being watched without really being watched. And so they do this extra kind of like trying to look cool thing, try and act like they don't care.
Ooh.
So like, let me just adjust this. Let me make sure this is tuned. Some of it's legit. Like I might really be tuning my guitar, but you have this like last moment, like kind of, because people are tangentially watching you kind of thing. So it's a tough backdrop for somebody.
I did not know that.
I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, you never know when they're going to get to the part. Thank you so much to this next band. You're like, you got to act cool. You can't be like, like, you know, and it's like, you know, it's a touchy subject. There's this whole weird ego thing that goes in with the music and stuff like that. So it's a tough backdrop.
But I remember we had gone on the TV at like some obscene early hour
way
of the morning.
Too early. I hated you so much, but you also gave me the TV bug. So I think I like wanted to chase that. It was my first time being on the news.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, and it raised a whole bunch of money, and the scholarship is still going on. I get like every year or 2 years or so, we get sort of an update on how the scholarship that we had started with the money we raised in that event. That was actually the largest part of the scholarship fundraising. And yeah, it's still going from what I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, and you know, hopefully we are all still going.
Yes. Well, I mean, when you said that was very nice of me to do that, that was like our instant connection as friends. It was no question when you were like, I have something. And then like some people in my life are like that. Like if you asked me tomorrow, listen, I'm putting this, I'd be like, I don't care. If I have the date, just fill me in later. Like I'm there. Like, and you're one of those people.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
Well, because it goes both ways, you know? It's like somebody that I've become friends with, but somebody that has also supported me tirelessly throughout the years. Like, I mean, yeah, the connections that we had over the live streams and stuff were great. You would get T-shirts for your whole family, and I would make them, and then you would send me pictures. Like, that was a very good connection for me to have there. Like, calling, you know, your daughter on her birthday and, like, doing a little song for her. Like, you said that was awesome for her, but I was like, no, that was awesome for me because she was so appreciative, and it was just nice to stay connected. And so you're one of the good ones is what I'm trying to
thank
say.
You.
So thank you very much. And thank you for coming on. And thank you for having me as a guest on yours.
Oh, it's wonderful. I am so excited for people to hear the first episode, and I hope people enjoy it. I hope they tell their friends about it. And I hope we do more things like this.
I think we will. And tell the folks what the name of your podcast is.
So surprise, surprise. You know, my last name is Marshall. It's a podcast about the arts. So it's the Marshall Arts Podcast. Yes, the Marshall Arts Podcast. either launching now or soon, depending upon when you listen to this. Available now or soon, depending upon when you're hearing these words.
Now-ish. We'll say now-ish.
Yes, yes.
I like that you sent it to me. I think you thought that I might talk you out of it. And I was like, absolutely not. This is amazing. I love it.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you'll be able to find it both at Nippertown and at dailygazette.com.
Lovely. Rick, thank you so much. Give my best to the whole fam damly, please.
I shall.
And we hope to see you soon. This has been Erin Harkes with the Mistress of None, with my guest of the martial arts program, Rick Marshall. I'm Erin Harkes, Mistress of None. We'll be right back. Thank you.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Mistress of None. This is Erin Harkes. That was a lot of fun. I hope that you like, listen, follow, share, all that good stuff. Follow my buddy Rick, his new podcast. He's fantastic. Thank you so much for tuning in, as always. Tonight, we have Lena Go Round, Cafe Lena. This will be my last one until September, so please come on out to that. You can get your tickets at erinharkes.com. Tonight's going to be an amazing lineup, all females. We got Sydney Worthley, we got Natalie Santini, and we've got the amazing, incomparable Roseanne Ranieri. You do not want to miss this show. Follow Mistress of None wherever you listen to your podcasts and on all social media, and follow me as well. Like I said, share. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. I don't care. Just because you don't like them doesn't mean they don't have ears. All right? Have a great week. I will see you next time. Be nice to one another. I love you all. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.